This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 347, brought to you by the Seagate GoFlex Satellite, graphically, and iFanboy listeners like you.
Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. My life, 24, and there's so much more.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 347. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And the internet's Paul Montgomery.
What happened?
Your Jim Ignatowski moment. At iFanboy.com.
Well, we should explain. Ron is out. He's flying.
With so. Paul being here, it just
what
seems normal.
What does a yellow light mean?
Ron is flying, as often happens in the summertime. So Paul ably stepped in.
He called. Not so ably. I woke up. I feel like garbage, but I'm here. It's episode 347. I didn't want to miss this milestone, so I looked in the medicine cabinet. I just went eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and hopefully it'll be okay. It might get a little loopy. Might get a little strange, but... it'll be fun. It'll be good times. And I love what you guys do for the comic book industry and for the pet community. And so I wanted to be here because I know this means a lot to you guys and it means a lot to me too. And I shaved half of my face. At iFanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics. And every week these guys read a bunch of comics and then one of them picks one and writes about it on the website. And then we talk about it on this here podcast along with various other topics of interest. And I'm not reading that. You guys are silly. You put things in the scripts. You're trying to.
I thought we'd get you because I know Josh was expecting it, but I thought maybe when you took over.
I forget about it every week.
Okay.
I'm not. Yeah.
I'm
not.
Ron Burgundy.
Before we get to the show, we're going to be talking about what happens in the comic books that we have read and that we are talking about. So if you have not read them, you could have plot points spoiled for you. You wouldn't want that, or you might not care.
That wasn't part of the deal.
You know about this.
I didn't sign on for that.
You know.
Deal with it.
You're warned. Connor, you had the pick of the week. A breezy week for you, I assume.
Yeah, it was a bizarrely light week. It felt like a fifth week when I went through that pull list to make my list on ifanboy.com/comics. I was surprised. I actually added a few I wasn't planning on buying just to sort of fill out the list because I felt like with the pick, I would have had not a lot of choices. But I ended up with Spider-Man number 4. Which I wrote Spider-Man about almost every time in the Pick of the Week review and had to go through with a fine-tooth comb and fix it.
As long as you have the capitalization and the hyphen correct, is nobody going to hold it against you.
Spider-Man number 4 from Marvel Comics by Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli. And we've all, I think, on the whole, enjoyed this series. It's been a fun little diversion. Great art from Sarah Pacelli. Bendis is, you know... Bendis is Ultimate Spider-Man. This is what the one kind of Marvel DC book I can't imagine without another writer. I think if he ever left the book, it would have to end because it's his book. And what you have in this issue is the scenes I think we've all been waiting for once they announced this crossover. And when they announced the crossover, we all were like, okay, that's probably not a good idea, but they did it. And once they do it, the real reason to doing this crossover is not so Spider-Man can beat up Mysterio. It's so Peter Parker can go sit down with May and Gwen from the Ultimate Universe and have a little chat. And that's what we got in this issue. Was in the last issue, the cliffhanger was Peter is now in the Ultimate Universe, and he shows up at Aunt May's house where Gwen Stacy is living with her, and the emotional fallout resumes. And in many ways, this was kind of the culmination of Bendis' 12-year run on the book, because Peter's dead. It happened in a weird sort of crossover. May and Gwen, there was a lot of crying about it, but they never really got closure because Peter's dead. And now they actually get to talk to the grown-up adult Peter Parker, and they get to sort of vent their emotions.
That always helps me grieve.
Just to meet the...
Just talking to an alternate reality version of the person I lost. It really helps.
I usually hire an actor who then comes in and portrays them, and I get to hug them and talk about who they're dating in the other world and things like that. But it reminded me a lot of that scene in the last season of ER, the one where George Clooney came back and he was sitting in the break room, Josh, you remember, with Bennett like Beckham and the girl from Freaks and Geeks, and they talked about who they knew in their various times at County General, and nobody knew anything.
Oh, I remember that.
See, I don't remember that part. I remember seeing him on the dock. Did he come back later?
Yeah. He came back.
Oh, the very end.
The very end. Yeah, the last season.
See, that's that last. Yeah, I don't remember that, actually.
Well, they're like, were you there for that? I'm like, no, I wasn't around for that one. I remember this.
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
And it's like,
yeah, it reminded me of that because, you know, it is so different. I like the scene where they talked about how Peter in the Ultimate Universe dated Kitty Pryde, and regular Peter was like, really? Kitty Pryde? From the X-Men? And it was tinged with sadness because Gwen kept wanting to know about her adult self, and you could tell sort of a gut punch every time she
Awkward.
Asked that. And I also got the feeling that she was crushing a little bit on older Peter because he's older and more mature, and she used to like him, so... And it was a great sort of funny stuff tinged with an undercurrent of sadness because May is sad because her surrogate son is dead. Peter's sad because he's hanging out with Gwen as she was the last time he saw her, pretty much. You know, she died as a teenager, and here she is as a teenager. And I just loved the emotional release of it all. I thought Bendis wrote great scenes between everybody. I liked Miles. Miles is sort of in the background tinkering with the web shooters. He felt very appropriate in the spot anyway, even though he didn't say much. He was sort of the eyes of the audience. You know, he made the sad face when sad face was appropriate, and he had to very awkwardly make them end the scene when they had to leave. And then there was the great silent Mary Jane Peter moment. And I just loved, I mean, this is you know, kind of like the Ultimate Spider-Man 13 moment for this series. You know, this sort of quiet, emotional stuff, which is you know, the good stuff in comics. And I also like I also like Peter hanging out with ultimate drunk Tony Parker. Tony Parker. No, he's blind. He's in the Spurs. Tony Stark, who is drunk and funny.
That guy's blind?
Tony Parker almost got blinded in a fight over the summer. It's the whole thing. I loved it. I love this issue from top to bottom.
I saw I didn't read it because I didn't, the first issue, you know. But I saw the panel that you put up, and I must say that if they had hinted at more of this in that first issue, I would have been a lot more hooked because I find these ideas very interesting.
Well, you knew it had to happen. That's the thing.
Yeah, you know... Yeah, probably. And I know I saw that panel that you put up, and I got like a little like hairs in the back of my neck. I was like, oh, that's awful, in a good way. Like that's a great story point. It, you know, it really actually leads me to. I don't tend to think of this of Ultimate Peter as being the same guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I think of him as a different. Like he's got the same name. But they all kind of looked a little different. But this would seem to suggest that they really are the same person.
Well, yeah, that's the ultimate reality. They look the same. They're different. It's a nature-nurture thing.
Everything about them physically and mentally is exactly the same. It's just
I wouldn't say mentally, because you've got people who are different personality-wise.
Yeah.
Would you say Aunt May is the same?
Yeah, well, that's the question.
Aunt May would be the same as a younger Aunt May, at least physically. Well, not necessarily personality-wise.
Well, say that
like a one-to-one, because like...
Right. That's what I was getting, because they weren't presented that way originally. They were different, you know, they were of different ages. They had different, you know, Aunt May in the comic books has always been 90.
Yeah, when mainstream Aunt May was that age, like Peter wasn't born yet, or he was much younger than Ultimate Peter Parker. So it's a little bit different.
But they would all basically look the same. They have the same, you know, the same sort of
DNA. But it's the same raw material, though.
If Ultimate Paul Montgomery walked in right now, he'd look the same, just with a very evil goatee. Or would Paul be the evil one, and then regular Paul would walk in without?
I think we're just all evil.
Okay. Well, this was the issue they had to have. There's really no reason to do this story without this issue.
That's
it's,
true.
It's to get them together in the room. And there's a great scene at the end when Peter's leaving to go back with Nick Fury, and Aunt May's crying, looking after him, basically saying, "I did a good job." You know, like basically talking to the other Aunt May. You know, it was the emotional release of all the stuff that's been going on, and just wonderful stuff. Wonderful silent panels that allowed Sarah Pacelli to really just have the characters act, which she's really good at. You know, a lot of stuff in the eyes, just great stuff. If you've been reading Ultimate Spider-Man for 12 years, like we have, God, and we talked about it last week, Josh, when you said it was like fast food this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've been reading it so long that it's sort of in your lexicon without even thinking about it, this was sort of the emotional release. And you can, Josh, you can pick this issue up and not read.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I really actually do want to go through and read the thing. I think I'd like to just read it one thing because the single
would be
issue.
Great.
Same here. That was my plan. I wanted to wait until it was collected because it was so, I read the first one as well and bailed because it was just so decompressed. And it's good. It's just, I didn't want to have to, you know, read it in monthly chunks or whatever. I wanted all together.
I kind of wonder why this would have been kind of cool to put in the regular series.
Yeah, I don't know.
And as even like a, and I like what's going on in the regular series now. I have no problem with it. But even as a way to like sort of those in continuity series like events, you know, like, and I feel like they don't do that anymore. Every time something is the slightest bit interesting, they break it out into something else.
Yep.
You know, like if you think Batman's a great example, you know, year one took place in the issues. The Lonely Place of Dying took place in the issues. This would have been a cool thing to take place in the issues.
I agree. I certainly agree.
You know, it's the same artist. It's the same everything. Why not?
Yeah, because they can break it out and sell two books, basically.
No, I get it. I just I think that'd be cool. I wish they'd do that more. Those are the kind of things that are really cool about reading ongoing comics.
I agree. But if you are at all a fan of these characters, you can pick up Spider-Man 4. Just knowing where they all are in the world at that time and not worry about the story. But at the same time, you know, the last page is Peter and Ultimate Spider-Man and Thor and Iron Man going off into battle. And I kind of am looking forward to that. I kind of want to see how they play off each other, you know, because they are different.
Did one of you get parakeets?
No.
I hear birds. Okay, go ahead.
Did you take
whatever you were saying.
Alzheimer's medicine?
It's fine.
So I loved it. I loved everything about it. It made me smile, made me happy. It made me laugh. You know, it was very emotional, which is what a good comic should be. Now, I think the one I was expected to be picked was Batman number 12, the art by Becky Cloonan, which I loved. The only thing I have a negative thing to say about this issue was there wasn't a backup story. It was just the continuation of the main story written by a different writer and drawn by a different artist, which was weird.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. Yeah.
And but at first, I thought, okay, well, and they've done this before, that when you switch to the point of view of like when Batman shows up, everything looks different. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But then they went back, but without changing the other part.
Right.
They went back to Harper Row.
It could have been maybe planned out better with like when Batman shows up, it looks one way. When Batman's gone, it looks the other way.
Right.
It may have been a more effective planning of how to do that.
And they're both good artists, but there's different inkers throughout, right? And so some of the Becky Cloonan pages don't look as good as other ones.
There's only one inker.
Right? Oh, it's just two inkers for the two different artists?
No, there's only one inker listed at all. I think maybe Becky Cloonan inks.
You're lying.
Yeah, there's only one inker listed at all.
No.
I think that she inked herself on some of the pages.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's what I'm
saying. Anyway, I thought her art was wonderful. I don't see her enough. She just draws books I'm not overly interested in, so when I do get to see her, it's just fantastic. She's a great cartoonist. This is wonderful.
I really like this character a lot, Harper Row. She had a great introduction earlier on in the series where she used like a car battery to jumpstart Batman after he got, you know, like he was next to dead.
Because
after
the Talon beat him up.
Yeah, he was down in the labyrinth and everything. And so that's a great introduction. It's like, who is this girl? And I hope we find out more about her. And it's taking a little bit, but I kind of like the way that Snyder did that, sort of giving this tease to the character and then coming back later and giving us more of her story. And she's this girl, and she works down in the power grids and repairing stuff, and she repairs stuff in her apartment, and she lives in the not so nice section of Gotham. Does she live in the Narrows?
Yes.
Yeah.
The like the urethra of Gotham City, and it's not the best place to live. And her brother.
On the other hand, she has a civil service job. She should be doing okay.
Right. Yeah. But she has a brother. I don't know if they clarify that if he's older or younger, but
he's younger. I think he said it.
Is it okay? Yeah. And he's gay, and he's getting harassed by people in the area, and there's some really traumatic scenes where he gets messed up pretty bad, and they cut the word fag into the back of his head. And she says, "Let me go get the clippers." And he assumes that she's going to clean up his hair and fix this, but instead she does it to her own head. And that's such an interesting like character choice and such a brave thing for a person to do. I love that scene where they walk into school together the next day and everyone's staring at them, and she totally embraces.
Why is she at school if she's?
Well, she's either working a night job. Or she's walking in with him while he's at school.
Okay. Either way, she has a bag,
so I assume she's working and going to school since they've got no other source of income.
Yeah, I think.
I think is really interesting about this, and I was reading it, is it's not really in DC's best interest to push up what is essentially in this age a political agenda. And yet they keep doing it over and over again, which I think is kind of brave and really interesting.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, wow, this is their biggest selling book, across the board. There's no red blue lines in it, and they're just from Scott Snyder to a certain extent, but the whole company is just saying we're going to go ahead and make this message part of it, which is great. It should be. I
look forward to when we don't have to describe it in terms of it being an issue or an agenda or anything like that. It's just characters. And,
But
in today's climate, you're talking about a foreign election like it is. Like there's no way that it doesn't
there's,
get red.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
No escaping that. But
I liked her interaction with Alfred a lot. I thought that was a great dynamic.
Yes.
And I like that, this in many years ago, probably the 90s or early 2000s, this was a regular thing would be to flesh out the world around Batman and tell this stories in Gotham. They'd have side characters like Harold would be around. He was a tinkerer and people like that. And you sort of got away from that for a long time. It's just sort of focused like a laser on the superheroes. So it's nice, again, to sort of build out the world around him.
I like that Snyder is doing. I mean, this could be his Sasha,
right?
Sasha. I forget her last name.
Bourdon.
Yeah, is that it? Yeah, Sasha, she was. Bourdon. During Greg Rucka's really long and excellent Detective Comics run, she was a huge character in that, and she's gone now. But she was
also a great Pepperidge Farm bookie.
I mean, honestly, if you were going to do a Lady Robin, if you're going to do a Carrie, this looks like a real big start for it.
Or she could just be the technical, wizard helper that she's very good with technology and sort of Lady MacGyver-esque. And I hate putting the lady in front of anything as a qualifier, but she does sort of build with what she's got. And
I'd prefer it that way, that they don't go the Robin direction.
Because there's already 18 of them.
Yeah, there's they're clearly editorially trying to streamline it and, distancing Tim Drake from even being a Robin. They're talking about him, just being Red Robin first and not a Robin. So they're really trying to streamline it. And so I don't think they want to add that. And I think it's cooler that she's just this additional character and she has her own thing. Like you were saying, fleshing out Gotham and its people, it's kind of cool, when they're looking up online, she and her brother, about, people have viral videos, go up on YouTube and there's video of Batman and the brothers talking about, getting like a Batman tattoo because he saved them from like a gang attack. And it's something that these days we haven't seen so much. So I'm glad that he's brought that back into the fold.
Or sneaking into the Wayne function so she can meet Tim Drake, like that kind of thing,
Like the public persona of not just Batman, but of
the Wayne
Bruce
family.
Wayne and
I bet those are great cupcakes.
Oh my God. Oh, we're doing this before lunch. This is a mistake. Now, another big one that I actually picked up last minute was Godzilla of a Half Century War number 1 from James Stocco, who does Orc Stain, which I love, which was a book of the month pick of mine. Wasn't meaning to. I'm getting very emotional, apparently, or dying, one of the two. Wasn't meaning to pick it up because I'm not a huge Godzilla fan. I like Godzilla in the abstract, but I always find I get kind of bored with Godzilla stories. But I thought this was an artistic tour de force, much like Orc Stain is. James Stocco does all the stuff for the book. And except for the lettering, I think Todd Klein lettered it, or am I crazy? Or is that another book? No, that was Punk Rock Jesus. Never mind. And
just go on your own here, buddy.
I should have taken the medicine, apparently, because I can't talk and I'm dying. What I thought was the story was okay. It was very much an introduction. I'm much more interested in as the story is going to progress. The title of the book is The 50th Century War, or The Half Century War, and apparently this main character, who was a tank operator in Tokyo and Godzilla attacked and when he was young, is going to be fighting Godzilla all through his life. And I'm much more interested in seeing that progression as I was this first story, which was fine.
you know, it's a Godzilla attack story, which is what it is. But it looked just wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely a setup issue, establishing the fact that this guy started out in his youth, going out on some weird, you know, military thing, and finding out that, oh God, this is a huge, like, they didn't know what Godzilla was. This is 1954, which is when the original movie came out, and I really like the fact that if you're a big Godzilla fan of the, like, especially the original film. Which is a little bit different than the many, many sequels that have come out since then. Godzilla's gone through many iterations, but this really goes into the mythology of that first film where Godzilla is killed at the end. There's a thing called, they allude to it in here, the oxygen destroyer, where Godzilla's underwater and the scientist with an eye patch goes down, and they put down this, it's dubious science, but like...
Wait, what? It's dubious?
It's pretty dubious science, but he's...
Because I was with it up until the giant energy-breathing lizard.
No, I'm saying it's dubious science because they try to explain it a lot. Like,
you should never do that in that kind
yeah,
of sci-fi.
Yeah, they like, try to explain it. Like, they remove oxygen particles from the water, and that destroys, like... You actually see Godzilla dissolve down into bones in the water, and it makes sense. And the scientist, like, sacrificed himself.
Wouldn't
really
the water also disappear if you remove the oxygen
right.
from it?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But
they killed all the fish!
But I like how there's a lot of crazy moments in here, and it's Godzilla chasing a Sherman tank through crazy Tokyo and destroying buildings and stuff, and all these hot pink colors and purples and blues and stuff. But then, like, his narration is kind of, there's a little bit of poetry to it. It's sort of like you're reading the journal of this Oda Murakami guy is the main character, and you can tell that he's, like, towards the end of his life, he's writing back about his experiences with Godzilla. And as a fan of Godzilla in general, I'm excited because of what you said, Connor, about how we're going to see this guy go through five issues and age through the decades and experience Godzilla in different ways, but also because Godzilla went through many different versions. I'm wondering if Stoko is going to just do a consistent Godzilla throughout where Godzilla is the same, or if he's going to change the design to reflect, like, how he looked in the 70s right. and when it was, like, goofy and stuff. So I'm kind of interested in that. But also just Stoko is just amazing and really exciting to watch.
I like Godzilla as a concept. I used to have a great Godzilla toy as a kid that was really way too sharp to be given to a kid. Like the spikes in the back, you could have really taken someone's eye out with. But I used to flail it around. It was awesome.
The only issue that I had with this is that the dialogue of the characters didn't seem correct. It was not period specific, and they didn't really sound like Japanese soldiers. But
like they didn't speak in Japanese?
No, but it was really like it sounded like current American slang more than anything. Which didn't really take away from it, but I kept noticing it. Just their attitudes. I mean, I've read a lot about the Japanese military, and they're pretty
bad. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's not a real life story.
I know. So. I know. Listen, yeah, I'm willing to go with the giant lizard. I'm willing to go with the oxygen weapon, but they gotta talk right.
It's sort of it reads kind of like 80s like anime kind of. Yeah. It's like it's sort of like Akira in a way, and he does draw it in more of a manga style than even is normal, at least with the characters.
It's just a thing I noticed.
This is
gorgeous.
This is him drawing humans and not orcs, and
they don't, they don't look a whole lot different.
Yeah,
it's just coloring really and hair. But it was definitely I'm around. I'm sticking
around.
It's
just beautiful, right? I mean, it's just yeah. Every page is just painstaking.
This is the kind of story made for him to draw. Just giant destruction by a giant creature. And yeah. So Valiant is making its appearance on the show in the next X-Men.
Yeah, they got to me, you know? We had to do it. No, I was interested in this one. Again, I know nothing about any of these Valiant books. I never read them the first time. I wasn't even aware of them because I wasn't reading comics then. So I picked this one up solely on the fact that it was Fred Van Lente. And I like to give his Archer and Armstrong number one. And it was cool because I didn't have any idea what it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I was even more surprised when I read it because I was kind of – basically, it starts off in one of these – going to sound political again, but not really because I like science – theme parks for people who don't believe in evolution.
Right.
Creation. It's like a creationist theme park.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they have cavemen riding on dinosaurs and there's
and
a cave
got,
rush.
They've got an army of kids that they have trained – in martial arts and various other things, and to believe that we've only been around for 6,000 years. And they take one of them, Archer, and they send him out. He's got to go and kill the bad guy. And so he goes to New York City, having never been in the world before, which is, you know, a funny premise. And then he gets in a big bar fight with a bunch of bikers, and then finds out that he meets Armstrong, the guy who he's sent to hunt and kill, and they get captured by some bigger force. And it was fun, and I really like seeing the sort of tightrope that you have to walk between the political differences that are going on between these characters and cultural differences. It was a good looking book. It was fun. It was interesting. I've read a couple of the other ones, and they didn't really grab me one way or the other. But I guess, again, a little more because of I like the way that Fred Van Lente's mind and even his sense of humor works. I really see a lot of possibilities and stuff he can do with this as he goes forward. And I don't know what it's gonna be.
And there's the conservative, like, sort of theme park, the creationist theme park. But then even before that, there's a scene in ancient Ur.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's almost like this Conan the Barbarian kind of thing first, and then it jumps to that. So it's a really interesting world that they've created, and it sort of reminded me like the sending Archer out and, you know, having the other kids talk to him and saying, "Promise me that you'll, you know, no matter what happens, you'll never come back here." And it's sort of like that thing that when the Amish kids go out, it's like
Rumstopper,
Perestroika. There you go.
Rumspringer.
Rutabaga.
Rumspringer,
yeah.
Something like that.
That thing, and where they go out and it's total culture shock. And it's very. I'm interested to see where this goes because it's not really like anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
And the art's great too.
Yeah, definitely. So that's definitely worth checking out. I'm glad that I did.
I think if you took the American Vampire series on the whole, like the main series and the side books and everything, I just love the side books. I mean, I love the main series, but I think the side books have been a little better. I'm not sure why, but just I love them. And I love American Vampire, Lord of Nightmares. This is number 3 of 5, and this is the good guys dealing with the influence of Dracula without him actually being there. And it was wonderful. I love these side adventures that aren't there.
It's where he really delves into the mythology.
Yeah.
And then obviously each one you get a cool new artist, so it's kind of exciting that way to see all these different concepts drawn by someone else. Not that Albuquerque is anything.
No, Albuquerque's great. Yeah, he's probably my favorite artist.
But it is cool to, I mean, each of the artists that come in are very exciting. So
I think at this point, I like these characters. I like Felicia Book.
Yeah.
And what was his name? Not, I want to say Cole Cash.
Linden.
The one from the last one.
Oh.
The kid's father.
Yeah.
Cash Cogan?
Coogan.
Yes.
I never remember character names. I'm pretty happy about that. I like these characters. I like what's going on, that she's got the vampire baby she has to take care of. It's not a baby anymore, but then the
vampire
sort of
toddler with the cleaver.
You know, and Dracula's in his head, and moreover, I mean, you Dustin Nguyen really getting to stretch on a different kind of tone than he normally does in comics. You know, if you look at that guy's DeviantArt page, it's all like superhero babies and cute
Chiba drugs. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is just like evil. It's, you know, big monsters and vampires, and it's bloody and violent.
It's even slightly different than he does Batman Beyond Unlimited. Yeah. That's pure super stuff. It's still this style, but this is way more darker and rougher than that book.
So that's been a ton of fun, and I like these constant other caches and versions of vampires, and the uneasy alliance that will go on between these guys and the others, and then the Russians are coming for them. And
I like that the Soviets have stolen Dracula to use him as a weapon, and they, it's way too much for them to handle, and it's been a disaster for them. And I like the fact that he turned on, and all these Carpathian vampire are you know, his unspoken army. And I love the little kid at the cleaver trying to kill Linden, and he just won't stop. I loved everything about this. Yeah,
this is I think it's still my favorite thing that Scott does.
American Vampire, it's great.
Yeah, out of everything.
I like that he can bounce around time and play with whatever he wants in the world, because he can do that.
We want to thank our sponsor for making this show possible and the video shows and all that stuff. The Seagate GoFlex Satellite is the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices. That is a lot of devices. With a 500 gigabyte Wi-Fi access and rechargeable battery, Satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, podcasts, and documents to be shared on your iPad or any other device. Really, it works with Android or any other sort of Wi-Fi device. You can check it out by heading to seagate.com/ifanboy, where iFanboy listeners can put in the coupon code iFanboy to get 10% off. I'm holding one right now. It's a hard drive that is portable and rechargeable with a Wi-Fi thing.
It fits in your pocket, and you don't have to fill up your iPad with video files. You can.
It's rad. If you think about it, say that you're buying an iPad, right? You want to buy the 16 gig one. It costs a certain amount, $100 more for another 16 gigs. With this, same amount basically, you get 500 gigs. So yeah. there's your math for the travelers out there.
It's a great little device. I've got one as well.
You have kids. You just load that sucker up.
With your porn that you watch furtively in their sleep.
You want to make sure that it's not those files.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, with that much space, you could fit like at least 3 pornographic films at the bit rate that I choose to go with.
Well,
so there you go.
You don't just like regular high def, right? You need to have like it has to be 10.
It has to be immersive.
Yeah.
What is the kid watching now? What is he watching now?
We watch Cars every day.
Cars every day. So you load Cars up on your GoFlex satellite, and then you don't have to put it on your iPad.
Yeah. Would you want to do that with your legitimate digital copy?
Yes. Cars 2. They all come with them now. They all come with digital copies.
I'm actually not even kidding. I have all of them. They've been a godsend because we have Apple TVs.
Perfect. All right. So. Thank you to Seagate. Now, Marvel Universe, The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, number 5, which is a very long title, is the companion...
All of the text.
It's the companion book to the cartoon, which I think is the best Marvel cartoon of all time. That's just my opinion. Yep. Now, it's notable because it's a fun book. If you enjoy the cartoon, you will enjoy the comic. It's written by Christopher Yost. There's always two stories, the main story and then a backup story. And the Christopher Yost, Ramon Bach's main story was fun. It was Captain America and Thor and Hawkeye and Iron Man and Wasp and the Vision fighting against the Viper and her minions. But the backup story was a Captain America story drawn by Todd Nowak, who used to draw Young Justice way back in the Peter David days.
Okay, cool.
Written by Howard Chaykin.
So that's a different thing.
That was not as expected, and it was not at all like Black Kiss 2, you'd be happy to note. I think we would have heard about that somewhere if it had been, but it's interesting to see the complete range of Howard Chaykin, because he writes a fun all-ages Cap story here.
Guy was a TV writer for a while.
Yeah, he's a pro. I mean, it was just funny. I wasn't at all expecting it. This one features Batroc the Leaper. There's a heist at the art museum, and this guy wants to hold all the French art ransom, so Batroc gets pissed off and shows up to defend France and also maybe steal one of the paintings.
Is it that there weren't a lot of penises, or there were just none?
Well, there was a couple, but not to the extent of Black Kiss 2. Obviously.
They were covered.
Yeah, no, I mean they were out in the open, but throwing
out anything.
I just—it's always impressive when you see someone you don't expect doing a kind of book you don't expect and doing it well as everything. I mean, Chaykin can write anything. Is the point.
You buy this every time?
Yeah, I do. I buy this, and I buy the Green Lantern one, and I buy the Young Justice one.
Well, all right.
Yep.
If you hadn't had enough of Becky Cloonan on Batman, you could also go and see what she does over in Conan the Barbarian, number 7.
That is how I like to say it, Conan. Conan the Barbarian.
That's how you say it in movies.
I love, this is the start of a new storyline called Border Fury, and it's a really interesting concept. It's Conan and his new lover, Baelit, the queen of the Black Coast, go back to Conan's hometown in Samaria, and he's going back there because he's heard rumors that there's this dude out there who's just been like raping and pillaging and murdering all around the countryside using his name. So he's giving a bad name to the name Conan. And so they go back and they want to figure this out. But it's also there's sort of a look who's coming to dinner kind of aspect to this because apparently everybody in Samaria, they're like huge bigots and they're really not into these people from Shem. Which is where Baelit is from. So when Conan introduces Baelit to his mother, she assumes that it's a slave that he's brought to, take care of their homestead. And he's like, no, I'm actually having sex with this woman. And
and she looked exactly like Sidney Poitier. So that I did not expect that. I was like, that's a
yeah,
joke.
So it's a bit weird, and but it's a great book, and there's some people out there, some supposed Conan fans who are bitching and griping about this book, the design, especially what Becky Cloonan is doing in her issues, saying that Conan looks too fey or like emo or whatever, and respectfully, I think they've just been too indoctrinated with like the Schwarzenegger movies, and there are other ways to interpret Conan, and this guy can still kick everyone's ass. So
I've got to say, I did feel like he was, I'm not talking about visually, I did feel like this version of him was a little more like, no, just keep it cool. We don't want to upset anybody. I was like, he's Conan. That's not what Conan does.
Well, I mean, I think the Schwarzenegger thing, the sword and sandal stuff, like, I think people expect him to be like this berserker and stuff and just be like this total meathead. But part of the initial explanation of who Conan is by Robert E. Howard is that he's like a very thoughtful, solenoid guy, and he's sort of he's moody and he broods a lot. So, and this is a younger, you know, Conan. This isn't when he's out there warfaring so much and before he was really a reaver. So this is, I think, a totally apt interpretation of the character. And I think the art's fantastic. I think the prose that's scattered throughout in the narration is wonderful. And
really gets
I really like this Baylet character. She's very interesting and is not taking guff from Mrs. Conan's mom. So
I think it would have been really interesting if she had killed that girl. I think that was the right choice, actually.
Yeah.
Because she would have.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also excited for the next few issues where we're going to see this guy, and we see a little bit of him towards the end of the issue, this pretender who looks a little bit like Conan and wears like crazy armor and is claiming to be Conan, doing some pretty heinous things.
He's the 90s Conan.
Yeah.
Pouches and armor. And
yeah, exactly.
On a horse.
So when these two finally meet up with that guy, there's going to be some hell to pay. And I think the people who want some crazy berserker Conan are gonna get it then.
Well, Punk Rock Jesus number 2 came out. I'm still struggling about what I feel with the series. It's really heavy handed. I guess it's supposed to be satire?
Yeah.
Because I mean, super heavy handed satire. Because in that sense, it works. But if it's supposed to be straight, then it's rough.
I think that there's a touch of that, and I think that this is where you see Sean Murphy he's got a lot of ideas. He's got a lot of things he wants to go after. But I don't think that he's the most sophisticated storyteller ever.
He's a great artist. The art is
the
wonderful.
Art. Yeah, the art and the visual storytelling is very good.
From a standpoint of style, it's stylistically interesting to the storytelling and sort of the mechanics of the drawing. It's all very good. I think it's a little bit big and silly.
Yeah, no. I think
it's intentional.
In the sense of like a Starship Troopers almost.
Right.
Where
yes,
it's not.
That's a really good example.
Full on satire, but when you step back and you look at it, and you're like, that's a little ridiculous. And I feel like it's sort of that kind of tone.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the main guy. Is it Thomas? Is that his name?
Yeah.
The guy who's trying to really protect the kid and the mother, Gwen. There's a sense that he has a really pure and genuine and kind of an admirable kind of faith and conviction. And I think that sort of saves it from the really broad stuff that he's doing with the New Christians of America,
right,
organization that he's using. So I think that there's some really broad stuff there, and in his depiction of like the media, both the people covering this on the news, like the Larry King looking guy, and then also is it Slate, the guy who's like in charge of this reality show. I think that stuff is all intentionally very over the top. But then when you actually go into that main guy, I think he's saying there's something very admirable and pure about his intentions.
I just think that Murphy's trying to juggle a lot of things in a relatively short amount of time, and so it's difficult to get all those separated. But worth reading. I think it's interesting. I think if this comic had come out 10 or 15 years ago, people would still be talking about it today.
We didn't even mention
the like polar bear who's just like palling around. Like
that's what I would want.
There's just huge concepts. It's a little Neon Genesis Evangelion in that way, going back to my anime roots. But
awesome.
I enjoyed it. Those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. But you are part of the show as well by going to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books, and you can make your own pick of the week. And so we'd like to run down the top 5 picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And this is a very nice spread this week. Number 5, Archer and Armstrong, number 1, with 3.2% of the picks of the week votes. Number four was Godzilla the Half Century War, number one with 14%. Number three was Punk Rock Jesus, number two with 14.3%, just edging out Godzilla. And of course, this is at the time of recording, so that might change. Number two was Batman, number 12 with 20.9% of the vote. Number one was Spider-Man, number four with 37.4% of the vote.
That's a strong list.
So a good list, and also a nice spread of votes there. You get the top three, top four.
I like to see that. Some of them weren't, you know, there was like, there's some Vertigo, there's the Valiant, there's IDW. Yeah. That's neat. DC and Marvel. Cool. Neb writes in with his user review of Fantastic Four, number 609, giving the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was 0% for anyone. And he says, this was an odd issue for me. I was really excited for it because it was Ryan Stegman's first issue of the series, and I've been a big fan of his since reading the She-Hulk's mini he did a few years ago. Is it me, or does his art look really weird in this issue? I mean, when you look at Scarlet Spider number one, his art was clean and the colors popped off the page. It looked fantastic. But here in this issue, his art's all scratchy and rough and dark. Normally, I don't mind this type of style, but it makes his art look like a cheap version of David Finch. I don't even like saying that. It doesn't doesn't credit an inker in the issue, so I'm assuming Stegman did this himself, which makes me think there's a purpose. Paul Mounts also colors the issue in a really dark textual tones, which only adds to the effect.
I didn't love this issue, yeah.
Yeah? Did you not love it from an art perspective or just overall?
Overall, I thought the story, every once in a while, Hickman's does an issue that's somewhat impenetrable or too far removed. And I thought
I think that's why I stopped reading it at a certain point.
But it's very rare. It's like 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And then I agree with Neb in that it was a different kind of Stegman than I was used to from seeing his work on the She-Hulk. I didn't read Scarlet Spider, but it was not what I was expecting. It's very scratchy and dark.
Is this the book where the Galactus corpse image from that? Because that's beautiful.
No, that was a fantastic
page. That's all I've seen.
Yeah.
But that page is just gorgeous and just.
I was
going to
say that Stegman normally works with an inker. It's the guy who did Scarlet Spider. It's the guy who's done his stuff before that, and he. They've been working together a long time, and it really smooths it out. He didn't work with that inker. He did ink himself on this one. And I didn't read it, so I can't tell, but I've seen preview pages. I saw the inks of a bunch of pages before they went up, and I liked it. I thought it was a really – I think it's just an interesting differential for a guy whose art can sort of go either way. He can totally do that sort of almost Mike Ringo kind of style, but then if he inks it himself, it looks a little different. I think it's actually a really interesting look at what differences an inker or a – or a colorist can make on a book.
Dix reviewed Batgirl number 12. Story 3 out of 5, art 3 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage, no percent. Though the fight between Batgirl and Batwoman promised by the cover is probably the highlight of the issue, Batwoman's inclusion in the story also feels sort of pointless. She adds nothing in particular to the story, nor is she following an obvious plot thread from her own book. It feels like an unnecessary crossover, but at least it isn't one of those blink and you'll miss it types. Batwoman's wedged into the plot here and serves some contrived function. She doesn't just show up to deliver a few lines of dialogue and then vanish again. If you're a Batgirl reader, you'll probably want to look to someone who knows the series for a more proper review. But if you're a Batwoman reader and enticed by that cover, I can say that there's a little fun to be had, and it's not the worst $2.99 you could spend this week, but this crossover is one you could easily ignore.
I haven't been reading Batgirl or Batwoman, but I think I might, because J.H. Williams is coming back to Batwoman in the next issue, so I might check it out just to see.
Okay.
What's going on, but I haven't been reading either of these for a long time. But
yeah, no, it sucks. I really dig, you know, both of these characters.
Yep.
But it's just it wasn't, you know, kind of doing it for me. I don't know.
Neither one is. Although they're going to be crossing over, or Wonder Woman's going to be showing up in Batgirl. I mean, Batwoman drawn by J.H. Williams, so I definitely might get that issue. Cause I think
Wonder Woman's going to be in Batwoman?
Yeah, with J.H. Williams on art. So
that's
I might
cool.
definitely check that out. But
yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah. So those are the user reviews. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics, make your pull list, rate and review your books. And if they're good, and if there's a book we're not talking about in the main segment, we'll get it, you know, you can get it on the show. Make sure it's good. In the meantime, if you're a creator or a publisher, you're looking for a way to get your book out there in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible. Graphically is the place for you. It's with the easiest solution. You can upload your books, whether comic book, children's book, sketchbook, photography book, just about anything that's graphically based, cookbooks even. And just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into the Amazon Kindle store, the Barnes & Noble Nook store, Kobo, and of course the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app made just for comics to find your book. You can get your book in front of readers in the place they're buying books. And those are those stores. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details.
Listen, I've heard it said out there that Graphically is not doing comic books anymore. That's ridiculous.
It's news to, it's us, wrong. News to us in our daily meetings.
That's what I'm saying. So definitely check that out. If you're a creator, you'd be silly to not at least check it out. That's what I think.
Yep.
On to our emails. First one is Benjamin W. of Strongsville, Ohio.
Strong.
That's a great name place. I've been reading comics all my life, but I only started reading mainstream comics with the New 52. I'm personally having an absolute ball reading Scott Snyder's Batman, but I've heard older fans talk about how The Court of Owls is a ripoff of The Black Glove. Thomas Wayne Jr. is Dr. Hurt, etc. My question is it harder for more well-read superhero comic fans like yourselves to look on Big Two stories with fresh eyes? Is what I consider new and exciting cliche and unoriginal for you guys? With so many thousands of comics under your belt, what does a story have to do to get you to stand up and take notice? That's a great question.
First off, don't worry about that.
I gotta say, I think it's really funny that when he said ripoff, I thought it was gonna be something old. And it was,
yeah,
was
that's
Black
not
Love.
Old at all.
I was like, that just happened.
That's
from like Morrison's run. And it's not. There's similar themes, but it's executed very differently.
Very.
Everything's about execution. He is right in the sense that there's, you know, in terms of complete originality, there's very little of it because they've been doing these superhero stories since 1938. But it's all about how you execute it, the details and the characters, and that's where the variation comes from.
And even if those things are similar, I think what Snyder did with The Court of Owls is it's a much tighter, more organized story. I think there's still a lot of like loose threads from the Black Glove stuff. Not that stuff is bad. I'm just saying that I don't think that it's as satisfyingly wrapped up.
When you say older fans, do you think he means like guys who are like 2-3 years older? Or he said, I heard older fans talk about The Court of Owls.
It's a relative term.
It's interesting because for me, this is actually an ongoing issue for me in terms of mainstream superhero comics. Like they've got to really, for me personally to be interested in, they do have to work at it to bring something interesting or at least the kind of thing that I'm interested to the table. But there's also a whole other fan of a whole other version of comic book fans who want to read stuff they've read, or they want to they want those familiar themes,
have those elements
recurring, and that's that's a valid way to look at it, I suppose.
Well,
love what you love.
In any media, it's the same story told differently. I mean, every love story is basically the same. It's a boy meets girl story. Boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. I mean, that's the story. It's just how you execute it and the details is what changes it. So comics are no different.
Yeah.
Plus, there's also a lot of that. Comics used to retell the story before years, so it used to be a normal thing to retell the story because you have new readership. Now you don't, so things are a lot. You notice it a lot more when you've been reading for 30 years than when you've just read for four.
And so much of the readership has been around for a really long time now, so and they're old, so they sort of are demanding more,
yep.
I think.
Tim, also from Ohio, it's an all-Ohio mailbag this time. Tim from Ohio says, let me start by saying I've always enjoyed comics, but just started actually reading ongoing series last fall, just after the start of the New 52.
Look at that.
I started with DC because of the clean slate, and then moved on to Marvel, then Image, IDW, etc., but I've significantly cut my Marvel reading down to 4 books, 3 of which are Spidey-related, Amazing Spider-Man, Avenging Spider-Man, and Venom, and then Daredevil. Now, I've always liked the X-Men. What kid from the 90s doesn't? So I had picked up some issues of Wolverine and the X-Men, which I read until AVX got going, and a couple of others, but dropped them all because I had no idea what was happening. There was so much I had missed in the years away from comics. Wolverine has clones and children, Magneto is good, and a bunch of other shit I can't remember. I also haven't even touched the Avengers books because there are just so many being published. I didn't want to waste any more time or money weeding out the crap. I also had attempted to read Avengers vs. X-Men, but it was so bad that I couldn't get past round 2. And that made me drop the only X-Men book I was reading, even remotely enjoying Wolverine and the X-Men, because I didn't care to read anything related to AVX. Now, getting past my long-winded explanation, where do you expect to see the Avengers and the X-Men lines going after this universe-changing event, universe-changing in quotes? Do you think they may be condensing them down to just a few outstanding books in each line, or will they continue with the confusing, convoluted, and overstretched mess that currently exists? And will the universe actually change, or will this just be Civil War all over again? I would love to be able to read some X-Men and Avengers books, but I'm worried that nothing will ever change, and the universe will just get more confusing than ever, and that I'll never actually be able to enjoy the characters that I love so much without reading a complete history of the last 60 years beforehand.
Yes. well, you've got Hickman taking over the Avengers, right? And then there's going to be a Remender Avengers book.
Well, the answer is actually no. It's not going to change because they're not condensing it down. They're publishing the same amount of books.
It's just musical chairs. It's different creators involved in different aspects of or different corners of the Marvel universe.
What he describes as trying to read X-Men book is what I've gotten every time I've ever tried to read an X-Men book. And it's not that it's confusing. It's that I'm not interested in it because it's not speaking to me as a new reader, except for when I read Astonishing X-Men by Whedon, basically. That was one of the only times that I was like, all right, I can get into this as a thing on its own. But I feel like for a long time, X-Men has been about you know, servicing and rechecking back into this huge, I don't want to say convoluted, because I don't necessarily think it's a negative. It's just not my thing. This thing that Chris Claremont set up, and it's just people riffing on that over and over again. And every time they want to goose what happened, you know, this character's coming back, and it's some, you know, one of those odd Claremont characters. And now if you forgot, like Ron, like he digs on that. He's been around for a long time. I remember, you know, over the past 10 years or so, every time somebody came on X-Men that I was interested in, whether it was Brubaker or Mike Carey or Jason Aaron, you know, like I was like, all right, I'll give this a shot. I'll try it. And I always sort of lost interest, because there would be some, you know, 2-3 issues in, there'd be some last page reveal of some character who...
Yeah, I don't think any of that applies to Wolverine and X-Men at all, not even a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say after AVX wraps up, maybe drop into that again.
Yeah. Even during AVX, it has only barely...
Well, he's saying he's not digging it during AVX, so I'm saying maybe after the event's over.
Yeah, that's true. It is very accessible, though, that book.
Yeah, I have no doubt. There's
no one reading comics, and I say no one, that means it's probably 10, who have read the complete 60-year history of all these characters. There's no one.
I know.
You don't have to have read all these books to enjoy them. And I think that's a fallacy that a lot of comic readers place on themselves, because the completist mindset is pervasive. But you can jump in and suss out things. I don't know a lot about the X-Men, but I always jump in.
I enjoy large swaths of Remender's Uncanny X-Force.
I agree with that.
But and there's stuff that, like, it's totally not... It's like it's in my blind spot. I totally don't... I know I don't appreciate everything that's going on in that book, but he's telling in such a way that... Sometimes I want to seek out more information. Other times I don't need to. I can kind of get it through context. It's not every issue or storyline works for me, but enough of it does that I really recommend that series. And like I said, Bendis is going to be bringing back, you know, the early X-Men stuff.
To Tim, I would say, we don't know because we haven't read the books, but I would say at least when Marvel Now starts, check out the first issue of the characters you want to read about. Because if they do their job, they need to make these books accessible to new people.
That doesn't mean
they're going to wash away 60 years of continuity, which they should, but they're not. It means they're going to try to write them from a place where you can get all the context you need from the story. So if you like the X-Men, check out Bendis' all-new X-Men. If you like the Avengers, Hickman's going to be writing the Avengers in a totally new paradigm than what they are now. So it's got to be accessible from the get-go, otherwise they're going to fail.
Grant Morrison's new X-Men actually didn't suffer from that either. Now, it was a question of whether people liked that story,
mm-hmm.
I think. But I read through a lot of that.
I think you get a lot of old-school Claremont fans hated it, like Ron. And then
exactly. People
who weren't loved it. So I think that because he went so far from... Oh, and then he did reference stuff. It's just
No, he totally did.
It's all about execution and context, whether they do it in a good
way. And even then, when you're a newbie reading, you know, Astonishing X-Men and new X-Men, that there's stuff in there that I totally have no idea what the hell they were talking about, but I just went past it. Like the Cuckoo Sisters and like the weird bugs living down in the, you know, below the X-Mansion. I breezed by it and... I went at it for other stuff.
Yeah, so there's stuff there. I mean, you have to get past the idea that you need to know everything. But again, Marvel Now, if they do their job, you should at least check out the ones you're interested in. If not, then you know, don't read them. Just read whatever else you're reading. You've got plenty. There's plenty out there.
That's very true. So those are the voicemails from the week.
Emails.
We are going to skip the voicemail this week because we talked so much. If you want to write to us, you can contact at ifanboy.com. And if you want to do a voicemail, it's 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697.
Wow, off the top of your head. It's not even in the script.
We also do other podcasts. So on Monday, you want to check out Don't Miss. You don't want to miss Don't Miss. Ron will be talking to Mike Allred about the latest issue of Daredevil featuring Stiltman. So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
Heyo. We also have the Make Comics podcast, which is a short informational podcast to those who are interested in making comics from various different ways, or those who just like to know how it's done. I talk to Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience on a weekly basis. We pick a short topic and go over it. I can't remember what's next week, but we just did graphic designers in comics, and I believe that about 75% of the people on our website are graphic designers. So that might be interesting.
This is episode 347. Which means in 3 weeks you will have episode 350, and long-time listeners will know that on the 50s we do an all-email show.
Oh, I thought KG Beast was going to come back.
He might. So episode 350, we're going to do an all-email show, which means we will review the Pick of the Week book, and then we will go to an all-email show. The show will go for a long time, longer than normal, usually around 2 hours.
Insufferable.
Usually Josh likes to have a cocktail during the show.
I can't think of a lot of times when I don't.
I like to have one, but stop at one.
It's funny to hear you say that. And I don't know what that says about you. I'm leaving it there.
It seems to be popular. The last time we did this, it was our third most popular show of all time. So the ABL show will be happening in 3 weeks, which means it's up to you to provide us the content. So if you write into contact@ifanboy.com with subject line 350, and the deadline is August 29th at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So you've got 3 more hours than normal since I moved. So you've got to August 29th, which is Wednesday, 3 Wednesdays from this or whenever you're listening. Actually, you could be listening in the future, so it could have been 4 years ago. But August 29th, 6 p.m. Pacific time, subject line 350. If you want to get your email to the show, we've got some old emails stocked up. We'll stick them in there too. But if you want to get anything new into the show, please send that. And since there's going to be so many emails, make them good, because in the past we've just stuck any old thing in there. But yeah, make them good. Episode 350 is coming up, so we'll be teasing.
You know what else is special about August 29th? 9 days after my 28th birthday. So just putting that out there.
Guys, it's 2 days after my 7th anniversary.
So. I got nothing going on that week, so I'm wide open.
You should get a thing, because you're going to feel really left out.
Yeah. Paul, remember when you started hanging out on iFanboy and you were like 22?
I think so.
God. What happened?
Could you grow a beard back then?
Yes. I've had a beard since I was in sophomore year of high school.
Middle school.
That's amazing.
So check out ifanboy.com for the...
For you, it's amazing.
For my pick of the week review, Josh's book of the month review, which is Parker...
It was 31.
The score... we'll be talking about the book of the month next week when Ron comes back, because he would punch us all in the penises if we talked about it without him. You can go to...
That guy is all about cocks now. It's the Black Kiss thing.
Yeah. You can go there for all the comics news every week. There's a lot of Marvel Now stuff. If you've been waiting to find out what the Marvel Now books are, we've been revealing them. Or everyone's been revealing them this week, but we've had the coverage. You can go to fanboy.com/about to find our staff pages, to see our social network links, to be our friends online. You can follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and at facebook.com/ifanboy to follow all the action. The video show is now over. We have done our coverage for San Diego. We are done with San Diego coverage. We did daily interviews for 2.5 weeks or so, and
I was up
some good
time.
Ones.
The Crazy Kirkman episode finally came out, in which the San Diego Comic Con security tried to force us out of the building in the middle of the interview because the show was closed, and that was fun forever.
You know why we can never do any more again? Because I had a good conversation with James Robinson on camera.
And he didn't turn his back to you like a shunned younger son who disgraced the family.
Right. It was great. He gave great answers. I really liked that.
So you can find those video interviews on youtube.com/ifanboy. You can find them on your iTunes aggregator. You can find them on your boxes. I think it's on the Roku
alligator?
Box and alligator. You saw. I think it's on. I'm not sure where it is, but it's all over the place. Anywhere
you want an iTunes.
We're on
alligator.
USA between White Collar and Burn Notice.
We're the bumper. It's a weird bumper between the two. What is Burn Notice?
9 hours of Burn
no
Notice.
Idea.
All right, Josh, take us home.
All right. Like I said just moments ago, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, which I do know off the top of my head. Although if I think about it, I can't. I'll just relate it like a trance. If you are sending in a voicemail, make sure to tell us who you are. Keep it snappy and have a good question. Yeah. And that's all. You know, be yourself. Have fun. But, you know,
have fun with it.
It's
Say,
for air.
Let's just have this one for fun. We'll do the next one as a take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I could grow a beard. I couldn't grow a mustache, so I had this Lincoln thing going on. So I was that kid.
You had a chin beard. You had Amish.
I had a chin strap. If you dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread the iFanboy word with your iTunes alligator.
It's true. Don't fuck with the iTunes alligator. I had
it's an alligator that opens its mouth, and there's a YouTube embedded video in there.
I had a goatee in high school because it was 94, 95. That's what you did.
That's a good point about the goatee, that it was 94, 95. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, that's what happened. I had one of those.
I couldn't grow one back then. I was literally 31. It was when you got laid off, Connor, and I was left in that office, and I was like, fuck it, I'm not shaving anymore. And I remember you had a beard. You had on like the grim winter of, was it like 97? It was your Arthur beard.
Oh, yeah, I grew a beard. Yeah, in college. That was the first time I ever grew a beard, was in college. Yeah. That was fun.
There's no real like cultural excuse for my Lincoln beard at that time. There wasn't an epoch for that kind of beard. It's just I could do that, so I did it. It worked out well when I was in my high school production of A Christmas Carol. and I played a Dickensian villager. So that's it for this week's show. I'm Paul Francis Montgomery Jr.
I'm Connor Sean Kilpatrick.
I am Joshua Haysworth Flanagan.
Oh, wow.
That's I wish. I didn't want to give my middle name because, you know, the internet.
Yeah.
People can have my identity if they want. It's fine.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is like you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.